Well, yeah, they missed last summer.
I think the guys.
Bubba Burger?
Oh, Bubba Burger.
Not familiar. Okay. Anyway, but it is wonderful to see you all. And hopefully another engaging class. And for those that are somewhat new here, this is not a lecture. It is not meant to be just having me drone on and on and on. My job is to push your buttons and to see if we can get you engaged, right? And to see if we can create a dialogue and a discussion about topics. I do want to say, though, that before we start, I do want to acknowledge the fact that we have two people here who have suffered a terrible loss. I do want to acknowledge that in terms of Muriel's husband, Sheldon, who was his dad, who passed away just a few weeks ago. I would like to take the liberty of dedicating tonight's class in his memory. And his memory should be for a blessing. And I'll tell you what I really think. I was bothered by this expression. I never really understood it. How can a memory be, what do you think? A memory should be for a blessing? A memory is a memory. It's either good or bad. I mean, it is what it is. I don't think that's what it really means. I think that if you can think about somebody, especially one who's passed on, and get something positive from it, to learn something from them, then the memory acts as a motivation and an inspiration for someone to do something positive, hence it leads to a blessing.
I like that.
I don't, his or her memory should be for a blessing. It's a memory. It is what it is. But I think that if we think about somebody and we say, this person had this particular attribute, something positive, right? And I want to emulate that, or I want to pass that on to my children. And then that memory acts as the means by which a blessing comes.
So you could say, may his memory act as a blessing.
That's really what it is. I mean, I'm not going to start changing people's terminology, and I got to go deal with Hallmark and how they want to have the next card. That's what I think in my heart. I think that's really what it means to say. At least that's how I'm interpreting. So in that sense, may his memory be for a blessing. So tonight, I'm not even going to tell you the song yet. Not even going to tell you the song. Tonight, I want to talk about how we deal with challenges in our life. There is nobody. What's so funny? I didn't even say a joke yet.
It's not funny. Oh. It's just like the gravity of that, the weight of that.
No, it's not going to be like that.
It hit me like, wow, yeah.
It's a good thing.
It's a very good thing. But I like most of our classes, I don't usually start with something so out of left field. I usually start with something that we know or can relate to, and then see if we can expand on it or delve a little bit deeper to appreciate it. So there's nobody that doesn't face a challenge in their life.
But is it an expected challenge or unexpected?
It won't matter. You'll see. I mean, yes, there are expected challenges and then there are unexpected challenges. Either way, how we deal with the challenge, whichever category it's in. So let's start with a very basic premise, right? Can you hear me okay?
Hear you fine.
Yes.
Perfect.
Okay. Yes.
I just purposely did that. Sorry. Okay. What's the Hebrew word for a test or a challenge?
I know this.
Okay, next question. It's called a nisayon.
Oh,
well, a nisayon is a test or a challenge, right? You find a Mishnah that identifies that our patriarch Abraham was tested with 10 nisayonot, 10 tests. And there's disagreement exactly what the 10 are, but you read the stories in the beginning of Bereshit, you read those stories, clearly we can identify a lot of them, okay? But the funny thing is that this word nisayon What does it really mean? It doesn't mean test or challenge, or what is it related to? Another word that you might be more familiar with.
It's miracle.
Okay. The word nace.
Oh, like on a dreidel.
Correct.
Yeah.
Right? That's
yeah.
the nun.
Yeah,
right? On your dreidel, right? Nace gadol haya, shem or po, depending which dreidel you have, right? Here or there. Right? The Israeli dreidels don't have the same letters as ours. Okay. So nace means a miracle. So Dimitri's, the wheels are spinning already, because how could the word for test and challenge, what would possibly be the relationship between that and a miracle? But wait, before you get spinning out of control, the word nace, if you were to look it up, really doesn't really mean miracle. It's a borrowed term. It means a flag or a banner. I know Olga's already thinking, what are you talking about, Rabbi? The word for flag is degel. I can tell. Okay? The word nace means a banner. Maybe not the flag that you're thinking of in terms of waving, but a nace is a big banner. I think of it as when Neil Armstrong went on in 1969 and stepped foot on that moon, and he planted that flag of the United States of America, what was the message that was being sent?
No aliens here.
Okay. It was a declaration. It was claiming
yeah.
we are, or we were here.
Here, yeah.
It was a pronouncement of, you know, when I would, again, I'm dating myself, right? But growing up with the band Styx, right? Kilroy was here, right? Kilroy, you ever see that? You know what I'm talking about? Right? Kilroy was here. It was all over the place. It was a declaration that said, Ich bin du, right? As they say in Yiddish, I'm here. That's what a nace is. Why is the word for banner or that declaration mean a miracle? Because really, isn't that what a miracle is? You see something that is just so extraordinary. And the only way to describe it is miraculous. That's, so to say, God planting the flag, the banner that says, Ich bin du. I was here. This was the big banner, the splitting of the sea, right? When the Jews were leaving Egypt, was a banner that said, I was here. Because you can't explain that naturally. So there's definitely a connection between the banner and the miracle. So far, I'm 2 out of 3. I got to get us back to
the test of the
test and challenge. Yeah. Why does a good coach challenge the athlete or whoever it is he or she is coaching, a life coach, right? Whether it's in whatever subject, what is it that they want the student
to sharpen the faculties
so that
creates an obstacle to overcome?
So that,
so
what?
To be better.
Okay, to be better, to excel. Can I phrase it a little differently? To take what is a latent potential and bring it into actual. Isn't that really what a good teacher, coach is trying to do? They recognize the values. Let me say it better. They recognize the talent that's within the student. And they're not interested in making life miserable, even though they're tightening the screws and they're pushing harder than the student really wants it. But they know that the ability to take out that which is only potential and make it a reality, you have to be able to push the envelope a little bit. Smart coach knows how to do it in a step-by-step process and not just jump all the way to the end, because that's not going to work. So essentially, the banner of the person, who the person really is, to say, this is who I am, you need to be challenged so that the latent potential becomes a reality. Think about any challenge that we've had in our life, and it doesn't have to be the hard, really difficult, life-altering kind of challenge, but just the simple day-to-day challenges. Having to do it again and again and again and pushing through is a tremendous accomplishment. And you're a better person because of it. Would you rather have not done it? Yeah, lazy me would say yes. But appreciative me says no. I appreciate that I was able to face the challenge and accomplish. So intrinsically, a nisayon, a challenge and a test, is meant to bring out the best within us. The best coaches are the ones who can identify what the potential is within that student. Student doesn't even realize it most of the time, but the good coach knows it, and the good teacher knows it, right? Why are you picking on me? Says the student to the teacher. Very often, right? And the teacher is like, because you can do it. No, I can't. As young adults, not even talking about young kids, but young adults, and even, dare I say, older adults, right? We don't have enough faith in ourselves, what we can and what we can accomplish. Unexpected challenges, right? Expected challenges, we see the trajectory, we see the step by step. It's the unexpected ones that perhaps even bring out more within us that we didn't even know was there. Abraham is tested 10 tests. Why? Because he has the potential to become patriarch Abraham, and God knows it. So yeah, was it an easy life? Abraham did not have an easy life. Did Sarah have an easy life? Not at all. Not at all. Abraham and Sarah went down in history as our first patriarch and matriarch that forged us as a nation. I say this all the time. We are called B'nai Yisrael, or Klal Yisrael, right? The nation of Israel, the children of Israel. The name Yisrael comes from where? Right. Who?
Jacob, right?
That was like a meatball over the middle of the plate. That's our guy. Right? So Jacob gets the name Yisrael after struggling and fighting, so to say, with the angel so that he... Okay. Why do we choose that name? We struggle with everything. But here, the name Yisrael has five letters. Yud, Sin, Resh, Aleph, Lamed, Yisrael. Yes? Watch. Who are our matriarchs and patriarchs? Can you name them? Go in order. It's easy.
Abraham, Isaac, and
patriarch.
Jacob.
Abraham,
Isaac,
Jacob.
Jacob.
Joseph.
No, that's it. Three patriarchs, right? Now on the matriarch. Sarah. Leah and Rachel.
Rachel, Rebecca, and Leah.
Right. Okay.
That was 12. There's an echo.
Correct. So watch. The name Yisrael is the letter of each of them. The Yud stands for Yitzchak and Yaakov. The Sin, Sarah. The Resh, Rachel, and Rivka. Aleph, Avraham. Lamed Leah.
How cool is that?
I think it's pretty cool. Who we are, the so to say, the spiritual DNA of the Jewish people are the letters Yisrael. That's who we are. So you want to tell me, yeah, Avram and Sarah, they're the great patriarch and matriarch that before the, but they had a rough day. They had some rough patches, challenges. Oh yeah. But look what became. Look what they became. Tests. How we deal with challenges and tests. So tonight, I want to be able to focus on the two only that I can come up with, two possible outcomes of a test and a challenge. One we pass and one we fail. Those are the two options, right? How do we react to either of them? Let's take Abraham again. Abraham, name me a challenge. Name me a test that, you know, comes to mind from one of the stories you might remember. The Binding of Isaac. That's a huge one. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else?
Idols.
Okay. Getting rid of his father's idols. Great.
go somewhere, I will tell you where.
Great. That was one of the first challenges. Lech lecha. Go.
Unto
where?
Yourself.
I'm not telling you yet. Right? There was no ways back then. I mean, there was, but what's the destination? I have no idea. You know? Find me something nearby.
With a view.
Right. Preferably. Right. Mountaintop wouldn't be so bad. Right? What else?
Mountain near me.
With clouds hovering. Right? What else?
Like hosting the three.
Good. Okay. Inviting the three angels in. Good. Hospitality. Come on. What's like a biggie that he seemed that he failed?
Negotiating with Hagar and everything.
Oh, okay. That's a good challenge. Not sure if that's a pass or fail, but another negotiating.
Yeah.
Think of another negotiating that he doesn't seem to win. You do.
Was it about this one?
Oh, very good. Mm-hmm. He negotiates with God to try to save Sodom and Amorah.
Oh,
you just win.
I know. We're just talking about that.
Oh,
you're finally
right,
failed.
Right.
Well, I didn't read. I failed to read.
Right? He argues, he negotiates with God, and in the end, he failed. So he's successful with some challenges and seems to be unsuccessful with others. I'm not judging it. I'm just stating facts. Okay. Let's focus in on when he is successful, and then we'll focus on perhaps where he's not successful and see how does he react? What's his response to all of this? Okay. Without putting anybody on the spot, does anyone want to share an accomplishment that you feel that you overcame a challenge? Again, doesn't have to be super big.
Yeah. So I did not get, I never learned how to read Torah. And as an adult, I decided I wanted to do an adult bat mitzvah. So I did. And now I read Torah often and chant a bima. And it was so hard. And it still is so hard. Every time I get a parsha, I'm like, but you know, I just plug away.
I've been doing it a little longer than you.
Yes.
And every time I get, I go, it's not simple.
Is it a trope for it?
That's it.
No, it's this simple. It's this simple. It's the one that goes.
Yeah.
It's not simple, but that's a great accomplishment. Okay. I'm going to put you on the spot then.
Please.
Okay. How did you feel? How do you feel after you knock it out of the park?
Can't wait to do it again.
Okay. Describe for me your emotion.
I think because reading Torah makes me feel closer to God. And I don't feel like it's my accomplishment. I just feel like I feel gratitude that I was a successful instrument.
And you don't feel like, dang, you coach this. Come on, you don't give yourself a little.
I mean,
come on, when I finish a good class, Liz knows. You know, I hold it in for about an hour and 20 minutes, so it just about I look at it, I'm like, dang, it's a good one.
There's something like that. Woohoo! No, there's definitely that. There's definitely that. Like,
you're like, yeah, give me the next parsha. Come on.
I can't wait. And I go through a period of like missing the practice.
Yeah,
I love it. Right, but there is a certain nothing wrong, right? You feel good, you feel great.
Really are.
Like, I'm ready to take on, you know what? I'm taking on a bigger one next time.
That's what I do.
Let me share this. We're all like that because success breeds more success. You want, if you feel good that you accomplished, you're like, okay, I'll take on the next challenge.
I bring it on.
However, I would suggest, right, and I'm sure most of us are like this most of the time, and that is we have to be careful that it not get too far of how to go to the extreme of, yes, I can do any of these.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I don't even need to practice.
Oh,
yeah. Now all of us are like shaking our heads like, no, I'm not going that far, right? there's a certain, we do have to take the accomplishment with a dose of reality, perhaps even a dose of humility.
A lot, well, for me, a lot of humility.
Well, I think for all of us, there's nothing wrong with taking pride in the accomplishment. It's where we start crossing over into the, look at me, look at what I can do, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be careful. So let's look at Abraham, okay? You brought up the binding of Isaac. This one always strikes me. And we're not going to necessarily, I know we've spoken a few times about the episode itself, but there's a few sentences, a few, even just words in the story that beg for further analysis. At that pivotal moment, Abram is holding the knife and he's about to do what seems to be the unthinkable, right? Yet God asked him to do it, so he's doing it. And the angel comes and calls out his name. Abraham, Abraham, he calls it twice. You want to check me out? Look it up in the book. It's there. Calls out Abraham, Abraham. Why the double name? So the simple understanding, nothing wrong with it, is he's got to get Abraham's attention real fast. You know, hey, dude, ho, ho, slow down. Right? So he's got to get his attention. I'm okay with that. The Torah wouldn't have to necessarily record it that way. You could just simply say the angel called out Avraham and he responded, yo, I'm here. Okay? Avraham, Avraham. Strange. There's only a handful of cases in the Torah where persons get called as a double name. What's going on here? So, the Zohar, the book of mysticism. Not an expert in it. I like to dabble in it a little bit. Okay? The Zohar is bothered by this question and makes the following observation. The way I understood it from what I read, and that is when a person is born, there's a picture, so to say, up in heaven. Given all of the abilities that God invests within each one of us, and each one of us has talents, that's why Hashem created us. We have something to contribute to this world, otherwise we wouldn't be here. We're not one of a 7 billion, we're one of one. There's nobody like you. Nobody. My teachers say, thank God. Right? There's only one, Svit Tachman. That's it. Only one. And even if I share a name with some dude, there's only one. Okay? My fingerprints are different than anybody else's. My brainwave patterns are different than anybody else's, as is all of yours. So that means there's a specific goal. So when a person is born, there's, so to say, a picture in heaven. If the person were to maximize their potential to become the great fill in the blank Zvi Tachman, this is what he can become. Okay? We don't know that, right? It doesn't come attached to the umbilical cord with a little note saying, here's what you need to do in life. Okay? But there's a picture of assuming a person maximizes their potential to become the best he or she can be. That's what it is. The goal in life, obviously, is to get the picture down here after 120 to match the picture up there. That's called the game of life. Okay?
Is the song like the army recruitment song?
It's right on. Oh, definitely. That's one of my favorite. Be the best you can be. Yes, yes. I use that slogan all the time because that's really that's the objective. Why am I here? To be the best I can be. Not to be the best you. I can't be you. You got to be you. Right? So fine. So Avraham goes through these challenges, test after challenge after challenge after challenge, until he gets to this 10th one, the binding of Isaac, right? And the angel stops him and says, Avraham, Avraham, says the Zohar, at that moment, Avraham down here matched the picture of Avraham up there. Hence, he called out, Avraham, Avraham.
Wow.
Says the Zohar, continuing. Sorry. I didn't think it would be that emotional. It's a fascinating insight. Says the Zohar, what's his proof? Avraham lives for quite a few years after the story of the binding of Isaac. There's not one more recorded challenge test that God comes to him and says, I want you to do this. Or that's it. Because he had achieved what he needed to achieve.
Well, there are double
No, not necessarily.
Yeah.
Not necessarily. There are other aspects about it that might work differently in different cases. But here, the Zohar on this phrase uses this idea.
I'm really inclined to believe that view because in linguistics, when we use in modern language also, when we say a word double, we're referring to the prototype of that word, right? Like, go get me that cup. Oh, you mean the cup. And somebody knows exactly what you know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Right, that's the
So
picture. This
that's
is the,
this is
I
the
love the word
prototype.
prototype.
This is the exact
Love it.
interesting.
See, look at that. Zohar didn't even notice. Right? But it's fascinating that right at that moment, right, he's accomplished. Interesting. Now comes the point that I'm trying to make in all of this, if this wasn't enough. What's Avram's reaction after accomplishing this? He's reached the zenith of what he's here for.
He know that?
Maybe, yeah, maybe no.
He has no way of knowing, I don't think so.
Let's say he doesn't know. But that feeling of he's got to feel like, I mean, listen, this is the only time.
Put that on.
Don't lose my place.
Then, an angel of the Lord called him from heaven, Abraham, Abraham. See, I'm not making it up. And he answered, Yo, no. He said, Here I am. Here I am. And he said, Do not raise your hand against the boy. Do not. For now I know that you are a God-fearing man. Now I know. Really? God, where have you been? Now I know that you're a God-fearing man. So maybe Avram doesn't know that he's reached the ultimate, but he sure knows he's accomplished something he's never had before. He's never had that kind of kudos to you, Abe. No, not until now. So there's no question that Avram knows that this was a monumental test that he's accomplished. Huh?
He almost killed his son, which is rather fraught with emotion.
Okay.
It's not described there as anything. But I would like
on.
to speculate what would have happened if Abraham had said to God, I'm not going to kill a human being because human sacrifice is prohibited.
By whom?
My God.
The same God told you to do it.
Oh, it's just.
Which way? Isn't the test to listen to God?
You decide which
I'm
way
asking
this
you.
goes.
I'm saying we can speculate either way. I don't know the answer. But the point being, what makes something right or wrong? It's not, there's no, there's no, there's
It's
no.
out of here.
But what you read was a God-fearing man. Why does it have to be fear?
Good. Good. I hate the word fear. Revering. Reverence. That's a much better word for me, right? Doesn't say that now you're a respectable God, respecting of God. There's a reverence for God. Reverence is usually to withhold doing something out of reverence for somebody.
Such thing
One
that
second, let me just develop that for 1 second. Right? There's two mitzvos in the Torah related to parents. One is kibud av va'em, to show honor and respect, and the other is mora av va'em, having reverence for mother and father. Right? What's the difference? Aren't they both really just being nice to them? There's two separate. Two of the 613, not 1A, 1B. Two separate mitzvah. So the Talmud is bothered by this. Isn't, I'm telling you, I don't share anything new. I got nothing new for you guys. I'm just repeating. Right? There's two aspects. To do something in the positive way, to do something for them. For example, if they ask me to get a cup of water and I do that, that's respect. I'm showing respect because if my friend asks me for it, I may or may not do it. But if my parent asks, I do it out of respect. Okay? Even if it may be inconvenient. But that's what my parent asks, I'm going to do it. That's out of respect. Not to sit, right, in what was the parent's or is the parent's seat, a defined seat at the table, right? I grew up with that idea. You don't sit in mommy's seat. That's mommy's seat at the table. Not because she's going to get angry. But out of reverence, this is, you wouldn't sit on the throne of the king or queen. Mommy is the queen of the house. This is her spot. That's not out of respect. That's out of reverence. You hear the difference? So this withholding, in other words, what Avraham did didn't show necessarily respect. It showed reverence for God. This was a whoa, out of awe. I'm going to do or not do in this case what I'm asked. There's a reverence for God. I wouldn't want to go against what God had asked me to do. Coming back, that's why I think it's different.
I haven't read this section for a while, but I remember that Abraham or Abraham, as you know.
I'm bilingual.
he did attempt to argue, but his argument, I believe, was not very mature. Because
what argument?
From memory, he said to God, like, if I sacrifice Yitzhak, then how am I going to be the father of many nations?
I challenge you. There is no.
He didn't,
it's not written in the Torah.
He did not argue?
Nope. Not at all.
Must have made it up.
No. what you're confusing it with, perhaps, is arguments in terms of saving Sodom and Amorah. There he goes all out.
Yeah.
And he argues every
point. He doesn't argue at all.
No.
He doesn't argue.
No. Which in and of itself is
did
fascinating.
To argue a little bit? Or
maybe.
Ask for clarification?
Great. I sure would have. If I was asked to do something that God himself asked me not to do.
Right.
God has taught Abraham not to do child sacrifice. And then the next phrase out of his mouth is, oh, bring your son Isaac. My hand would have gone right up and said, oh, excuse me, can I get clarification? Right? But that's why I'm Tzvi and he's Abraham.
So did the picture in heavens change at that point? When Abraham didn't do the same thing as he had done at the Sodom and Gomorrah?
Maybe that's the challenge. Maybe the challenge is he willing to accept?
Yeah. The first challenge, decide what the challenge is. Is it
I can't prove it to you. We can speculate. I don't have a good answer other than I'm reading facts. And that is, when it comes to this particular challenge, he doesn't argue at all.
Mm-hmm.
He goes along with it. He even convinces Yitzhak to do it, which is also astounding.
In a tricky way.
Okay? I'm not sure where you want to go with this. The point that I'm trying to make, and we can go
because
through.
Because he knows he is doing something wrong. Otherwise, he would have.
It could be. Then I'm asking you, then why is he given the accolade?
That's my feeling.
So I'm asking you. I'm asking a question on your theory.
You passed the small test. You passed the test.
Now I know that you're a God-fearing man. It doesn't sound like a small clap.
But I'm not sure. Yeah, but I'm not quite sure if it can be.
So does God tell him he failed at any point?
God is not going to be right all the time. That's the point.
Why doesn't God point out to him where he failed?
At some point, God needs to step back and let the people, whoever the leaders of the people are, to do the right thing.
So he didn't interfere in Avram's decision, but according to you, Avram may have made a mistake. Why doesn't God point that out? How are we supposed to go? If a coach sees or a teacher sees a student make the mistake and not offer any constructive way to correct it, the teacher is doing the student a disservice. God should point out, not give him a thumbs up by saying, now I know you're God-fearing. He should have said, I understand why you did what you did, but.
Because you're God-fearing, but you missed a piece of education.
Where is that? That's my question.
It's in my mind.
Okay, that's fine. That's perfectly fine. That's perfectly fine, okay? But how does he react? That's the whole reason I brought this up, right? So how does he react?
Warm enough? Put the heat on. You can hear.
He brings the ram instead, right? He brings the ram instead of his son. And at the very end, the very last verse after he's given this wonderful blessing, by the way, which again I encourage you to read it. Right? The angel of the Lord calls to Abraham a second time from heaven and says, by myself I swear, the Lord declares, because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your favorite one, I will bestow my blessing upon you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars of heaven and the sands on the seashore. And your descendants shall seize the gates of their foes. All the nations of the earth shall bless themselves by your descendants because you have obeyed my command. Your Honor, I rest my case. Okay, last sentence in the chapter. Abraham then returned to his servants, and they departed together for Beersheba, and Abraham stayed in Beersheba. What is his reaction to this whole story? He's totally chilled. He's not coming back high-fiving the servants and saying, dude, do you know what blessing I just got? Do you know what just transpired? OMG, all in capital letters. Totally even keel. Okay, let's continue. How about the same response when it comes, or reaction, when it comes to his failure after Sodom and Amorah? Let's turn back a page or two. The man went off in the zone. Abraham remained standing before the Lord. Abraham came forward and said, will you sweep away the innocent along with the guilty? What if there would be 50 innocent within the city? Will you then wipe out the place and not forgive it for the sake of the innocent 50 who are in it? Far be it from you to do such a thing, to bring death upon the innocent as well as the guilty, so that the innocent and guilty fare alike. Far be it from you. Shall not the judge of all the earth deal justly? Right? Them fighting words.
Yep.
And the Lord answered, if I find within the city of Sodom 50 innocent ones, I will forgive the whole place for their sake. Abraham spoke up and saying, here I venture to speak to my Lord. I, who am but dust, dust and ashes, what if the 50 innocent shall lack five? Like, how nitpicky are you going to be? Can you destroy the whole city for want of the five? And he answered, right. And he answered, I will not destroy if I find 45 there. But he spoke to him again and said, what if 40 shall be found? And he answered, I will not do it for the sake of the 40. He said, well, let not my Lord be angry if I go on. But if 30 should be found there? And he answered, I will not do it if I find 30 there. And he said, I venture again to speak to my Lord. What if 20 should be found there? Right? Darn good negotiator.
He owns a stall.
And he said, in the mall, no question. And he said, let not my Lord be angry if I speak but this last time. What if 10 should be found there? And he answered, I will not destroy for the sake of the 10. Is he successful?
No.
I don't know. He is successful.
He is successful.
Because God didn't find.
Okay.
He succeeded in his goal of negotiating.
Okay. Did he save Sodom and Amor?
No.
Sadly not. Next, well, again, last verse of the chapter. Well, when the Lord finished speaking to Abraham, he departed, and Abraham returned to his place.
Well,
like, how anticlimactic can you possibly get?
He was not concerned with saving the city. He was concerned with saving the righteous people.
I don't think so. There's hundreds and thousands of people living there. And he says, what if we can find just 50 righteous, save all of them? He's not looking to save 50. He wants to save all the cities.
That's not the way I understand it.
Well, yeah, and I encourage you to read it. Yeah. It's there.
But maybe he got to the point where, like, in a city of that size, if there aren't 10...
Well,
I see his point.
Well, it's an interesting
thing. Again, I would have expected a response then. There's no response. Avram, and the only thing it says is Avram returned to his place. As if just another day.
There were no righteous people.
How can it be? If I just went through... Huh? Really? After you expend... Oh,
Well, after
you go ahead and you slug it out with somebody to really, like, after this, right? I love you, Dimitri. You know, this is all coming out.
I'm not in the creepy way, right?
Not at all. Not at all. In a very wonderful way. Okay? After this, I don't know about you, but I got to take a breath, right?
I'm just looking for understanding. I mean, I don't mind being wrong.
That's good.
For
good luck. You know what I'm saying? Like, there should be some Avraham acknowledged. Avraham, not gave up, but Avraham, like, come up with something other than he returned to his place. He just accepted
it. What is the last sentence right before that?
When the Lord, I will not destroy for the sake of the 10.
Uh-huh.
When the Lord had finished speaking to Abraham, he departed, God departed, and Abraham returned to his place.
But this is before the destruction. The destruction hasn't happened yet.
It's the next line. The two angels arrive in Sodom, and Lot was sitting at the gate, and now the destruction, now Abram witnesses all of this.
So, but maybe,
is it?
Yeah, like maybe he's at peace. Like, I brought as hard as I could, and I got him down
yes,
to 10.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
But how at peace can you be when you don't know what's the fate of what you just argued? Okay? I'm asking such a simple question. When you expend and you try your hardest to help,
sometimes you
and you don't know the fate of it. You're okay? You can sleep well that night?
Is that what it means?
He returned to his place is more than just I know he went home. No, he stayed there for the rest of his life. Of course he went home. The Torah is telling me something that's so irrelevant.
To Hashem, but not, if you, you know, quarrel. I mean, in other words, if the decision is not his.
So return to his place, you're understanding much more symbolically, not just he physically went back home. I'm accepting, okay, I return back to my place. How hard is that?
It would
be extremely difficult.
I don't know if
I can't believe we're underselling how critically hard that must have been for him.
Can I for a second juxtapose or superimpose it with that history or story of Jonah, who did not want to be a prophet?
Okay.
Does it give you any clues? Because I think there are two. I'm not questioning that. They haven't done this mental work.
I'd be happy to entertain it.
Maybe
so
hard to...
there is a prophet that nominates, the person who was nominated to be a prophet who does not want to prophesy because
and he runs away.
All of them will be destroyed regardless of the number of people.
He wants them to be destroyed?
Oh, yes. That's why he would not prophesy to Nineveh.
Okay.
I have a different
understanding of that story.
All right.
But okay. I'm not sure how to go. Whichever way, I'm happy to entertain how
the two parallel stories.
Okay. That sound like they're an opposite. Counter to each other. Okay.
But it would be difficult for us to put equivalent our emotional responses to situations. Some of them are not the same. You know, we have a
program. Would you so agree? Would you say it would be more or less emotional? For Abraham than us.
Well, I mean, I'm saying that's such a foreign experience. It's hard to know what he,
okay,
his emotion should be, right?
I think the big challenge for somebody who encounters God is a craving for a witness, you know, like a human witness, someone that you could talk to that's like, I get it. Because it's, if you haven't had an encounter with God, then you don't get it.
Having never had an encounter, I don't know. I mean, I experienced God in my life.
I had a near-death experience, so I kind of did.
Yeah,
it's all you want is a witness, and it's like most elusive thing.
I hear that.
Yeah.
I'm just struck how it's almost as if the Torah is going out of its way to minimize his reaction to both an extreme success and what seems to be a failure.
I mean, obviously it's on purpose.
I'm pointing it out. We could simply just say, okay, it's just the Torah's way of it. But I'm always bothered, always. I always ask myself the question, not sometimes what happened, but why the Torah chooses to tell us that. It doesn't tell us every detail. It doesn't give us verbatim of every conversation that they had. So for whatever the reason, the Torah chooses to tell us that piece of information. What would have been different had it just simply say, when the Lord had finished speaking to Abraham, he left? What would I have said Abraham did? I don't know. I can speculate from here to who knows what. And I would have been fine. But yet it tells us this phrase. And he went, and Abraham returned to his place.
Because normally his place is not to chat these things over with Hashem. So his place.
But it was.
Well, it was temporarily.
No, he's been chatting with God since the journey.
Does
which is, you know,
does
a parsha before.
has the passion of a leader.
Does Avram have the passion of a leader?
Or he sees himself as pure an instrument. Can he be a little more than the Chromebook?
18 degrees now.
I don't know.
I think he cannot. He is a great gentle, but he's not a ruler.
Okay. I don't know if I want to go down this road again. When you are a person who influenced the world and introduced monotheism to the world, influenced thousands upon thousands of that generation and forevermore, it's hard for me to say that you didn't exhibit leadership qualities.
Well, that's the specific leadership in terms of spiritual leadership, but not leadership of a nation.
What nation? There's no nation yet.
They're on the world.
He's dead.
I'm guessing.
I'm not understanding. What nation
never crossed into the canal? Because he completely dysfunctional.
Dimitri, are you trying to say that because Abraham wasn't yapping everywhere and telling her and sharing? Hold on,
yeah,
let me finish.
It's a different person.
Right. So you're seeing leadership as somebody who intentionally leads other people, but Abraham led by his experience and his interaction with God as a representative. So it was one to one rather than this way, God to
yes.
Abraham to people.
King
so
David
different.
Won the battles.
Right.
King Solomon built the temple.
Yeah. Okay, anyway, I think we're getting off track. But
I'll just argue that Abraham had thousands of followers.
Correct.
Okay.
He was a spiritual leader and a progenitor. I just don't see him with this kind of thing that a drive, I would say, enthusiasm.
Larry and I saw a movie. They want
to see. I'd love to hear sources other than just a gut feeling why you feel that way. But not now. But not now.
But
not
it's
now.
A different. It comes from a brain.
Okay. I come from a school where you have to back up a theory. There needs to be sources for it, not just what my head thinks. So that's the school that I come from. But either way, and maybe it's getting lost in all of this, how Avraham deals with the challenges, the ones that he's successful with and the ones that he doesn't seem to be successful with, there's a certain even-keelness about it.
I mean, we all, through our lives, face... And it's almost like you win some, you lose some, right? And there's acceptance as you mature.
Yeah, that's
that,
the key.
That
when
comes
we mature,
along,
yes.
So that even when you don't win, sometimes you go back to your place.
Great.
You...
Excellent. And I think that's such a beautiful idea because it takes a certain level of maturity to understand that we shouldn't be on the super high or to fall to the super low. That's really what, for us to be successful, because we face challenges, some small, some big, and some we are successful at, and some we fail. If I go off the charts when I'm super successful, and I knocked it out of the park, and I give myself so much credit, and I'm ready to take on the world, and that's a super high. You're asking. You can't live in that realm. It just can't. Similarly, when we fail and we feel bad, we feel dejected, rightfully so, right? But not letting it get to the point of where it's so super low that it's so hard to get out of it. To me, again, let's go back to what we started with. If NACE, right? Test, banner, right? Miracle, is all about bringing out the qualities. And every challenge I face is to help me overcome, help me bring that into, to make it, bring it to fruition. Okay, so then I have to keep it within the perspective of, okay, it was a hard challenge. Maybe next time I can do better. Maybe there's room for improvement, right? I took a test the other day. I passed, no problem. Thank God, everything went great. But the instructor asked, how many of you are super excited that you did well on the test? Not one hand went up. And he said, why? Because we all recognize that, yes, we passed, but there was room for improvement. That's okay. That's okay. Every challenge we face, the ones we're successful, take pride. Go ahead. Take on the next parsha. Absolutely. Success breeds more success. And that's great. But keep it within the boundaries. Mm-hmm. Don't let it be the super high, like I can do everything. And don't, when we don't have those successes, don't let it get too low. The trait that I think combines and allows us to do that, and you said it, but I didn't want to acknowledge it because it was going to steal my thunder, was that sense of humility. That sense of, I was given a gift, that I was able to do it. Good. I put in the work. I had to bring it and make it a reality, but I was blessed with that ability.
Yeah.
Not everybody has that. It's a certain talent that I was given, right? I look back, right? Again, I now have been teaching, thank God, for many, many years, right? I never saw this coming. In my mind, I went for my degree in computer science. I was going to be that guy who was going to make a nice amount of money doing my computer science, right? Not just the IT, sorry, Liz, right? Right, my name Rabbi T, right? Now gets changed to Rab IT, because I've got to deal with that in the office, right? But that was different. But then an opportunity presented itself and I reconsidered that, right? What would have been, right? I wasn't necessarily born naturally to teach or whatever it is. It took a certain level of honing skills and whatever it is. And obviously there's still room for improvement and all of that. But, right, that's who I am. The thought that I would be in a cubicle doing computers would be, I wouldn't be. When 120 year comes, they're not going to say Tzvi matches Tzvi. Mm. That will not happen if I stay in computer science. No way. That's not who I was meant to be. That understanding that I have a certain talent, you have a talent, you have a talent. Every one of us has those God-given traits and talents. And therefore, our successes, we don't give ourselves all the credit. It's a talent that I had. I worked on it. I do take credit for working on it and making it reality, but I was given the raw materials. Give God that credit there also. So there's a sense of humility. And similarly, when we fail, right? Don't go off the deep end and say, I'm such a loser.
Those talents are still within you.
Okay. There's a chat. Okay. I think of the one who does the hurdles, right? I mean, that's just, to me, it's mind-boggling. I love it. How amazingly talented
you're
these athletes.
You're running and going and going.
Oh, my gosh. And that literal, that one nanosecond when the leg is out and the leg is up and up.
Yeah. And how can they not
right. I trip over stairs. I'm having trouble.
Why does Abraham not feel anything like this? Why doesn't he feel triumphant or with the goal?
I think it's because of this concept. He understands that whatever it is he's accomplishing is what he's meant to do, and he was given talents to do that. And so when he does it, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. What am I giving myself all the accolades for? It is what it is. But not in a positive sense. Yeah. Many people use it, it is what it is, and say la vie and whatever. That's the teenager version.
That's right.
John
16.
I mean, yes, you have to accept. It's acceptance.
Yes, it's acceptance, but a motivation that I can do it. I can do it.
Do we ever see Abraham have a reaction to his entire... and especially in the beginning, his interactions with Hashem? Like, because maybe he had to get over the, who am I having a conversation with?
So it's funny you
and
say
like,
that.
And to get through that, then that made the other successes and failures like, okay, well, if I can accept the fact that I'm dealing with this, then...
So it's funny you say that, because... I'll look at it again. It doesn't come to mind. It doesn't show, to the best of my recollection, anything of that sort, which is amazing. Especially given, how old is Avraham when he's given this first conversation? Let me take a step back. Sorry. Before that, I think, Tracy, you mentioned, right? The idea that Avraham, you know, destroyed all of his father's idols, right? King Nimrod, who's the king at the time, threatens Avraham, and he says, I'm going to throw you into the furnace, if you don't stop espousing this ridiculous notion about monotheism, et cetera, right? Right? You're familiar with this? Right?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Okay. Which do you think? One could argue and say that the challenge of allowing himself to be thrown into the furnace for his belief that there's one God might have been, one could argue, an even more difficult challenge than the binding of Isaac. And I'll tell you why. In one respect, by the time the binding of Isaac came around, God and Abraham have been talking like every Monday and Thursday. Right? They're buddy buddy. There's numerous conversations that the Torah records. Right? Right. He gets a little alert. God meeting in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
numerous. Here. Right.
You're not double
talking about real Zoom. Right. So one could argue and say that by the time the binding of Isaac came around, God, Abraham knows God like, you know, like a best friend. Like, so if God asks him to do it, okay, I don't understand why, but okay, God asked me to do it, of course I'm going to do it. The going into the furnace, there had been no conversation yet. God had not introduced himself to God yet. God introduced himself to Avram yet. It was a theory. It was nothing more than a hypothesis that Avram had, based on his looking around the world and coming to his conclusion that there is only one God in this world, and he's trying to teach people about this, and King Nimrod threatens to throw him in the furnace. His willingness to do that was nothing more than a theory. I would argue, just for the sake of argument, right, that's an even harder test than it comes to the binding, because the binding Isaac, he knew it was God already. However, I'm wrong. I'm 100% wrong. I'm wrong. Because, again, if the whole point of challenges and tests is to keep bringing out potential into reality and making you better and better and growing from it, then the hardest one can't be the first one. Okay? Therefore, why am I wrong? Why am I wrong? Why is it that the first one isn't as challenging as the latter one? I'll tell you why. Because the first one, this one of being thrown into the furnace, was a logical corollary of his theory. It made perfect sense. If I believe that there is a God, and I believe there is one God overseeing everything in this world, then logically, in my own human brain, I can comprehend that a follow-up of that is that I have to be willing to sacrifice for this belief. Right. That makes sense to most people. They are willing to sacrifice for their principle. We do it all the time. It makes logical sense. Like Dimitri said, the last test of sacrifice your kid made zero sense logically in the human brain. Everything that Avraham stood for and what he was taught by God, he's now being told the exact opposite. God wants child sacrifice? You don't want child sacrifice. Aren't you the same God that told me through Isaac you're going to build a nation, and now you want me to kill Isaac? What about all the people who I've taught and all of these ideas? I would have raised my hand and said, this doesn't make any sense logically. And yet, I don't. Maybe that's an even more difficult challenge. When I don't understand it, and it flies in the face of my human comprehension, that's a much harder challenge than giving up my life, because logically that made sense based on my belief. That's why I'm wrong, right? But the concept that Abraham, when he's first introduced, they don't find any such emotional getting over that hurdle. It's almost as if it's like, it's proving my theory, which is astounding. I don't know if I could have handled it that way. The first conversation, what's the first conversation God has with Abraham? Very first. You said it before. No. Wrong guy. That's Moses. It is what I
mean.
Is go on the journey. The very first recorded lech lecha, go. Really? And Avram's like, okay.
Can I throw something out?
Yeah, please. I mean, I would have expected at least, Shalom Aleichem, nice to meet you. You know, hey, what's going on? I'm so glad this thing came about. There's nothing of that recorded.
Please pay attention.
Go ahead, Stacey, help me here.
I mean, you know, please. I think when you're in the presence of God, you feel a certain way. Something that's ineffable, something that you can create, have that taste of the other realm when, you know, the veil is lifted. Like, the rules of physics and the rules of the way your emotions are regulated don't really apply. And it is kind of chill. It's just like, okay, because it's you're taking in things that, you know, are not...
It's hard to put your finger on it. It's hard. You've never experienced it.
May I bring up another
please
thought that comes out of my head because I didn't bring mine for next time I will.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
We have that one.
I'm listening. Okay. Go ahead, Michi.
All right. Did not Abraham send off his son Ishmael and his mother Hagar,
mm-hmm.
as she was called?
Yep.
Did he argue about against that?
He asked. He asked God,
uh-huh.
and he was told, "Listen to Sarah."
I wanted to make Arabs as well.
He was told. He was overruled. God said, "Listen to Sarah." Mm-hmm. Now, just as a general rule to defend, right? Not every single time do you have to listen to your spouse. Not God had to intervene.
You have to listen.
No. I'm just saying, if God had to intervene. Just saying, I don't want to go on record here that I
So do you think that Hashem talking to Abraham in Abraham's mind was like, well, that's the next, like,
the logical step.
Right, like, I came up with my theory. And,
but even so, I know I would have been like, yes! God, look at that! My God, I'm right! Eureka! You know, I would have been screaming from the mountaintop.
Well, why not?
Abraham is even keeled. He doesn't want it. Okay, this is what I need to do. My challenge is, okay, let me just finish this. Let's finish up with this because it's late. One of the other aspects about when we don't succeed is we grow from. We all know this concept already. And I just want to share with you so many of other people who you'd never in a million years guess. I got to read you one in particular.
Oh, what's the song?
Oh.
Yeah.
You had a bad day. And you have a bad day. Okay. That was the song. Dang, I forgot about that. Right. I was holding off on that. Okay. Okay. Maybe you'll know this. Maybe I did this. I don't even remember anymore. Okay. At age seven, his family was forced out of their home and he had to work to support them. At age 9, his mother died. At age 22, he failed in business. At age, I didn't tell you yet. I want you to guess. At age 23, he ran for state legislature and lost. Lost his job and couldn't get into law school. Age 24, borrowed some money from a friend to start a business and went bankrupt. Spent the next
Abraham Lincoln.
Spent the next 17 years of his life paying off his debt. Age 25, ran for state legislature again and won. 26, was engaged to be married. His bride died and his heart was broken. 27, had a total nervous breakdown and was in bed for 6 months. 29, sought to become Speaker of the State Legislature, lost. 31, sought to become Elector, lost. 34, ran for Congress, lost. 37, ran for Congress and won. 39, ran for re-election to Congress, lost. Age 40, sought the job of land officer in his home, was rejected. 45, ran for Senate of the United States, lost. 47, sought the vice presidential nomination at his party's national convention and got less than 100 votes. 49, ran for the U.S. Senate again, lost. At age 51, he was elected president of the United States. Ed?
Ed got it.
Abraham Lincoln.
Yet the fate did get him. Because got shot after winning the war.
He's got saved
out. You see, though? Right? Failure. He knew he had what it took. And he's not going to let those, and they're harsh. Some of these are harsh.
Still got shot.
Harsh.
I would have given up.
Right? Most of us would have given up. Okay?
Maybe.
How many paintings did Van Gogh sell in
Zero.
How many did he sell in his entire lifetime?
Oh, that's small.
He sold one.
One
painting in his lifetime. Van Gogh.
That's right.
Okay. Steven Spielberg rejected from the college of his choice 3 times.
They're sorry.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Really. They'd have buildings with his name on it now.
Yeah.
In 1954, let me just finish, then we can talk. In 1954, the manager of the Grand Ole Opry told Elvis Presley, "You ain't going nowhere, son. Go back to driving the truck."
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. After his first audition, the great actor Sidney Poitier was told by the casting agent, "Why don't you stop wasting people's time and become a dishwasher or something?" Hall of Famer Michael Jordan, Bob Cousy, they were cut from their high school teams.
That's Sidney Poitier?
Sidney Poitier? Yeah. Elvis. Elvis Presley. Okay, one more. Walt Disney.
Okay.
Walt Disney was fired from an early newspaper job because his editor said, quote, "He lacked imagination." He went bankrupt several times, had to fight the city of Anaheim over the plans for Disneyland because the council thought the park would only attract riffraff.
Well, that's true. $800 a day.
You can't give up. Successes shouldn't go to our head, and failures should not crush us. That's the message. You had a bad day. We all have bad days. We all do.
Everything because of the United States.
And also, I found something here. Abraham finally displays emotions. The matter distressed Abraham greatly or concerned the son of his. So he does care about certain son of his.
Okay. I'm familiar. Abram is a fascinating character. They all are. Mm-hmm. Who's not complex? The reason why it's here is because we can learn from them. Their positives, their negatives, their successes, their failures. They're us. Remember, Yisrael is our name. This is our DNA, folks. This is who we are. The good and the bad and the ugly.
You started to ask how old he was.
Oh.
When he started.
Yeah, how old?
80?
How old he was when he started his journey. When Avram, you talking about Avram?
Well, his,
to go on his journey.
To God.
Yeah.
80?
Close. One way.
75, really.
Mystified.
But I'm
not fussed. Maybe that's why I said thank you.
They asked, whatever, it's for another whole conversation.
It's like so even keel.
Right? Yeah. Moses didn't take over.
I'm tired.
Moses didn't take over with his leadership.
He's just asleep half of the time.
Moses, right? Moses, when does he start his leadership? He takes over his leadership to take over the whole part of Egypt at 80.
So
they only know that because he dies right as they're finishing the journey. It is 40 years in the desert. He dies at 120. Can you imagine starting your main job, your career, 80?
That's at 120.
120 is not so crazy anymore. 120 is not crazy anymore. Okay, even if what's the word I'm looking for? Make the ratio. Okay, so it's 70? 65, where everybody's looking to retire, right? They're just getting started.
Who's in office? Major.
Right? It's no joke. It's no joke.
Yeah, he didn't give up either.
That's another
one. He didn't give up either.
No, I'm talking about the former. Like, he lost his whole family.
Yeah, start all over.
It's not simple. Mm-hmm. But this is, I think, important. You have a bad day, it's understandable.
Yeah.
But let's keep it in perspective. Let's let the good days be good, not crazy good. And that's not the bad days get too bad. That's my thought. And I'm sticking to it. All right?
Thank you, Rabbi.
All right, my pleasure. All right?
Rabbi, there's a tangent to this. That if you fail at everything in life, you become president of the United States.
Say that again, Ed.
If you fail at everything in life, you